blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWPRadio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vafidez.
Tonight's episode of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today for a free audiobook and a free, absolutely positively free, 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/PWP Radio. Remember to include that /PWP Radio. So they know we sent you. Once again, audibletrial.com/PWP Radio. Everybody who signs up helps support the show. Thank you very much and enjoy Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio.
Card at WrestleMania. You know, Jake Roberts, I'm well aware that you're familiar with the dark side, but are you familiar with the inside of a casket?
Oh, that's real funny. You know, what a wicked web we can weave when first we labor to deceive. Now, what I'm telling you is this. I've always said I was on the other side of the fence, and I ask you, oh, yeah, it's where you were at, too. You're right with me. You can't ride the edge, brother, like I can. That razor's too sharp for you. So you think about this. WrestleMania, I'm going to get what I want.
You know, I was absolutely appalled, Jake the Snake Roberts, when during the course of the funeral parlor with Paul Bear, all of a sudden, you took that steel chair and continued time and time again to pummel the back of the Undertaker.
Well, let's don't forget the fun part. Now, the fun part was slamming his hand in that casket and locking it. You see right there, you're a big rat caught in a big trap. Now, as far as me hammering you with that chair, brother, oh, yeah, I raised that chair up high and I cranked it. And you know something? It felt good. It felt real good. Almost as good as slapping Elizabeth. Almost. But you see, that simple foreplay, man, look at this. Watch it now. Time and time and time again, it's like teasing, you know? Hanging the meat out in front of the animal, that's all I was doing. I tasted it, but I didn't finish it. I will finish it when the time is right. Nothing premature here. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for the right time, and the right time's the Hoosier Dome. That's where it all comes apart. So crushing you with that chair was just child's play for me. Because you comes to WrestleMania, I don't play, brother. I will not play. So when the time is right, I will hook that DDT, and I'll crack your skull the same way they would on National Geographic, Gene. Nothing different. If there was a medal awarded in the Olympics for crushing seals' heads, baby seals on the ice, I would take the gold. I would take the gold. Why? It's a job that has to be done. It is a job that has to be done. And you or a job that has to be done, Undertaker. So when the time is right, yes, I'm going to hook the head and drive it straight through the mat. Big circle, big dot, that's going through. Then what will I do? Put you on the funeral pyre, brother, and turn up the gas. And if you say you know Satan so well, then you won't mind burning in hell.
We'll be right back. Yo, everybody. Welcome to a special Friday night edition of PWP Radio Episode 80. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today, a variety or a plethora of topics. Just going through them right now, we're going to talk about, first of all, there's a lot of stuff going on in TNA. We're going to go over the Slammiversary pay-per-view. We're going to go over that. We're going to talk about this four-sided ring situation that's going on right now. We're going to be talking about last night's Impact and an event that happened that's made professional wrestling history. But it's not just going to be TNA as well. We're also going to talk about WWE. We're going to talk about the Money in the Bank situation. We're going to talk about seemingly the breakup of the Shield. All three guys are kind of going their own separate ways, different ring attires, different theme songs. By the way, as I'm doing this, I'm aware that SmackDown is on right now. So normally on PWP Radio, we don't normally talk about spoilers, but since SmackDown is happening as we're doing this, I don't really consider it a spoiler. So we'll be talking about some of the events that are going to happen on SmackDown as well. We're also going to be talking about Daniel Bryan's injury, as well as many of the budget cuts that happened to the roster last week. Last but not least, we're going to be talking about Ring of Honor. They're going to be having their first pay-per-view on live on pay-per-view, Best in the World, this Sunday. So now you'll be able to order it on pay-per-view the old-fashioned way. Very excited. There's a bar not too far away from where I live, and I'm going to be going with some close friends of mine, and we're just going to go there. We're going to order it and, going to eat some food and then watch Ring of Honor. So it's going to be cool. Apparently it's going to have a big turnout. There's going to be about probably 30 people there, which is surprising. I wasn't aware there was that many Ring of Honor fans in my local city, so I'm looking forward to it. We got lots of stuff to talk about. You know, it's going to be a very exciting show. But first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to bring in, I believe this is JCD. It should be. Hey, is this you, JCD?
No.
Oh, is it Seth?
No, it's... My name is...
Your name is what?
I'm John.
John?
Yes.
Okay.
I was just listening. I didn't think I hit number one.
Okay. Well, I have what I do is sometimes I save, like, the usual numbers of people that call in. So you must live in the New Jersey area.
Yes, sir, and I'm actually listening to Thursday Night Destruction all the time.
Okay. All right, sorry about that. Okay, right, there's many different shows on PWP now, and right now, PWP Radio, the one I'm doing, we were like the original show, and a few months ago, we made some negotiations, and, you know, a bunch of other radio shows debuted. But PWP Radio is the original, and on the original show, the owner, Jay, he's from New Jersey. One of the co-hosts, John, who has the same name as you, he's also from New Jersey. We got another guy named Seth. He's a regular blog writer. He's also from New Jersey. So a lot of people that call in have the 732 area code, so I just kind of got you confused.
I understand.
Yeah, sorry about that. All right, we also got another caller. I think this is Ron. Ron, is this you, Ron?
Yo, what up, Epps?
Yeah, what's going on, Ron?
Nothing, Ron. Chilling, man. I was just waiting on you, man. 8 o'clock to hit, man, if I talk to my boy Epps.
Aww.
What's going on?
I feel special. Oh, we're just going to talk about a bunch of stuff tonight. We got a two-hour block, and to all our listeners out there, the call-in number, I always forget to plug this. The call-in number is 760-888-5749. I'll repeat, it's 760-888-5749. So, and we're just going to go through a bunch of topics today. I'm going to go through TNA first, WWE second, and then Ring of Honor last, because I want to end the show on what's coming up, which is Ring of Honor pay-per-view. What I'm going to do first is I'm just going to go and review this Slammiversary thing. Would you guys like to stay on the line and review it with me, or do you just want to just go through it really fast?
I can stay on. I watched it.
Okay. What about you, Ron? How you feel about it?
What, Impact?
No, not Impact. Right now we're talking about Slammiversary first.
Oh, it's cool. I didn't see it because I was watching soccer Sunday, but it's all good, man. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, how about I'll meet you and I'll bring you back when we talk about Impact, because I know you got a lot to say about what happened last night.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So First, we're going to be talking about TNA Slammiversary 12, which happened June 15th, 2014. Took place in Arlington, Texas at the College Park Center. I believe the attendance was somewhere around 2,500. And overall, the show was actually pretty good. I was not able to watch it live. I had some jury duty stuff I had to do earlier. I was able to catch the replay the very next day. And it was actually a good pay-per-view. And we're just going to go through the pay-per-view right quick, go through the matches. We always do this here. And we weren't able to do a review because so many people were busy. So I have the full card right here. I'm just going to go through it right quick. And okay. If you'd like to stay, would you like to review the matches with me, John?
Yeah, I'll review them with you.
All right, cool. All right, so for our first match, we had the opening match. It was for the X Division Championship. It was a ladder match. You had Sonata, who defeated Manic, Tigre Uno, Crazy Steve, and the Wolves, both Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards. This was a decent opening match. Keep in mind, the X Division title is very important around this time of year. TNA has started the concept where at Destination X, whoever's the champion can basically give up the title for a title shot. So it's like they're cashing in, but the catch is they got to give up the X Division Championship. Option C, as they call it, it started with Austin Aries. He did it in 2011. It was 2012, I'm sorry. He did it in 2012, and Chris Sabin did it last year. So who knows what they'll do this year. I don't really see Sonata doing it. I mean, he's a good wrestler, but his main weakness is he's Japanese. He can't speak English. So I see him losing that title very soon. This match was cool. My only beef with it is whenever I see ladders in TNA, I kind of roll my eyes because anyone who's been watching TNA since the beginning, they know that, you know, TNA was basically created to be the alternative, to be different from, you know, WWE and other stuff, and that was kind of like where the Ultimate X and other crazy matches like that came from. So now that they're using ladder matches, it's like, But, you know, that said, it was a good match. Crazy Steve was pretty over, a lot of Crazy Steve chants and stuff. But there was a lot of cool spots. I liked it when Eddie Edwards and David Richards were, like, basically headbutting each other on the top of the ladders. That was pretty cool. And but in the end, Sonata won. It was a decent opener. I was not able to record the times of the match, but it's what you would expect from an X Division match. Nice to see Manic again. Wish they would use him more. Tigre Uno always looks great. So, you know, pretty much your standard TNA opener, always opening with an X Division match to get the fans excited. And, you know, it was a good way to start the show. John, what did you feel about the opening matchup?
I thought it was a good opening matchup. I actually picked Tigre Uno to walk out the X Division champion. But going towards the end of that match when they did that spot where Davey Richards got powerbombed onto the ladder, he looked like he got really messed up. Interesting to see Sonata win. I agree with you. I do not see Sonata doing option C. I do expect him to lose the title, just to who, I don't know.
Right. And we'll especially go into more detail about that, especially after the events of what happened on Impact last night. All right, so next, this moves us to our next matchup, which was Bobby Lashley, who defeated Samoa Joe. And what was basically going on here is the build-up to the show was MVP against Eric Young. MVP, he went heel. Let's go back to the beginning, because I know all of our listeners don't watch TNA like that. Back in the London tapings earlier this year, you know, MVP debuted with the Wolves. And he was a babyface at first, and with the help of Bully and a few other baby faces in TNA, whatever. There was a Lethal Lockdown match, a lockdown, you know, Team MVP versus Team Dixie. And, you know, MVP's team won, and Bully Ray turned face, helped them out. So this gave, like, full power and control to MVP. But eventually he turns heel. EY becomes World Heavyweight Champion. He defeats Magnus, and, you know, MVP turns heel. And so MVP was basically abusing his power, and he was going to fight EY here at Slammiversary, but he suffered some type of knee injury, not at TNA, but at some other independent show. I'm not exactly sure where, but he suffered a kind of like a knee injury that's basically, like, as you can see, as fans saw on Impact and as they saw on Slammiversary, he's doing the clutches gimmick, you know, crutches gimmick. We've seen it with Brett. We've seen it with Kurt Angle. We've seen it before in the past with many other wrestlers and stuff. So what they did was they improvised. There was two matches here tonight. Or at that night particularly, you had Samoa Joe and Bobby Lashley, and you had Austin Aries and Kenny King. So whoever wins those matches would then go on to the main event against EY in a triple threat match, cage match, that is, triple threat cage match. And, you know, MVP, when he turned heel, Kenny King and Bobby Lashley joined him, and so they sort of formed
this kind of like mini nation of domination thing going on. And so that's kind of like where it leads us. Ironically enough, before MVP turned heel, when he was still a face, Austin Aries sort of screwed him over a little bit, and Bobby Roode didn't really like him. So it's one of those storylines where, like, in the grand scheme, it sort of makes more sense. Aries and Roode didn't really like MVP, but now you know why, because Aries and Roode and storyline, kayfabe-wise, they saw MVP for what he really was, which is basically a corporate heel, you know, but whereas everybody else, they were falling for the stuff that MVP was giving them. So in that respect, it indirectly turns Aries and Roode face in the process. So, of course, most of this is a bigger deal for Roode, because, you know, Aries, he's flip-flopped several times. Anyway, we've talked enough. Samoa Joe and Bobby Lashley, this is a good match. They've always had good matches together. In the end, Lashley won with the spear. I'll tell you, Samoa Joe always gives good reactions, no matter how he's booked and no matter how long he's away on TV. Every time there's a big pay-per-view or a big match, the fans always respond well to him. And Bobby Lashley, he's a good wrestler, too. I don't understand why fans like to just, you know, shit on him, because he's actually pretty good. He's very athletic. I mean, sure, in the charisma department, he may not be that good. But, you know, he's a good wrestler, you know. He's no different than a guy like Brock Lesnar. I mean, I don't see, because as big as he is, he's able to do a lot of athletic moves and stuff. It kind of sucks that Joe lost, seeing as how, you know, he's been off TV for a while and he comes back to lose. But, you know, at the same time, you can't have both of MVP's guys lose. You know, if you got to pick between King and Lashley, like, what's more realistic here, King or Lashley? So, but Lashley, he ends up beating Joe for spear. This match went about like 10 minutes and stuff. The story was Joe was trying to hit the muscle buster on Lashley, but, you know, Lashley's so big, Joe was unable to, you know, properly execute the move, and the finish came where Joe was going for like that running clothesline he does in the corner, but he almost hit the referee or Hebner. He stopped himself, and then Lashley got out the way and he speared him. Lashley has a pretty good spear, so he hit the spear on Joe. 1, 2, 3, and so Lashley wins, and he goes on to the main event later that night. It was a good match. All right, John, what do you think about this match between Joe and Lashley?
I thought it was a good match. You basically matched power versus power. It was nice to see Lashley win clean and definitely set up for the big showdown later in the evening, just trying to figure out who else was going to be joining them, whether it was going to be Kenny King basically turning into a handicap match or a double turning it into a true three-way match.
All right, yeah, I pretty much agree with you there. All right, this moves us to our third match, Magnus with Bram against Willow with Abyss. And this was a decent match. The whole Willow thing, like, I respect Jeff Hardy for being different, trying to change it up, but, I mean, the kids love Willow. So, I mean, and the Willow merch does sell. It is selling merch. Jeff Hardy or Willow is one of the few guys that can legitimately sell merch. I think the problem with Willow for, I guess you can say, older fans is, when Mick Foley, when he had, like, Mankind, Dude Love, and Cactus Jack, all three of them, not only were their personalities and personas different, but their in-ring ability and his style was different. Like, Dude Love, he sort of wrestled a proper style. Mankind had somewhat of a diabolical, self-inflicting style, and then Cactus Jack sort of had, like, a I-don't-give-a-shit sort of style. Like, he changed his move sets. I mean, he still used the same moves regardless of which character he was playing, but the mannerisms of it were different. So Willow, Jeff Hardy changes up his move set slightly. Like, there's a few new moves he does. Like, he does a cartwheel, like, into a splash. Sometimes he'll go to the top rope, and he'll just sort of, like, let himself fall, kind of like a something like that. But the majority of his move set is the same, like, and his mannerisms are sort of the same. The fact that they keep mentioning that it's Jeff Hardy isn't really helping or doing any favors, because when Mick Foley had his Faces of Foley thing, even though we all knew it was Mick Foley, the commentators never directly said, oh, Cactus Jack is Mick Foley, Mankind is Mick Foley. Like, they sold it like they were three different people. But here on a commentary team, they keep saying that Willow is, you know, Jeff Hardy. And really, you can tell us, and like, the thing about Mankind was it was a very convincing disguise, whereas Willow is pretty obvious as Jeff Hardy. The only difference is he's just wearing a mask. I'm getting off point here. What I'm trying to say is this Willow was not a bad gimmick, and I give TNA and Jeff Hardy credit for trying to change it up, but I can definitely understand why, you know, some of the older fans are having difficulty connecting with this character. That said, this match between Magnus and Willow was decent. And in the end, Magnus goes over. What basically happens here, I believe, like, Bram was trying to interfere or something like that. I think he got, like, a steel pipe. That's, like, the weapon he likes to use. And then Abyss got, like, you know, Janice, the little wooden stick with the nails on it. And, you know, that chased Bram off. And I believe, like, Willow went for the Swanton, and, like, Magnus got out the way, and he hit one of his finishers, 1-2-3. So it's actually cool to see Magnus win. Even though he's not, you know, world champion anymore, he's still one of TNA's young up-and-coming guys. And, you know, it's nice to see Jeff Hardy, you know, put other guys over like that. So, you know, Willow, he lost, and Bram or Magnus, they went over. So I'm imagining this feud will continue. The match was okay. It was okay. What did you think about this match, John?
It was a decent match. I think these two could have had a better match. But I agree with you. Willow, Jeff Hardy, they're both just out to lunch.
That's a nice way of putting it. All right, so this brings us to our Hall of Fame little thingy, where Kurt Angle comes out, and Kurt Angle is basically going to introduce the next inductees to the Hall of Fame, and he introduces Team 3D, which definitely caught me off guard. I didn't know who was going to introduce. So Team 3D, Bully Ray comes out, and then D-Von comes with them. And, Team 3D, they're going to be going into Hall of Fame. How it works, to those that are not familiar with TNA, they announce the inductee at Slammiversary, and then they're inducted at Bound for Glory later in the year. Team 3D, or the Dudley Boys, whatever name you want to call them, they're definitely the most prestigious and the most successful tag team in pro wrestling history. I mean, 23 or 24, I believe it's 23, I could be wrong, but they've won over 20 tag team titles. Pretty much everywhere they go, they've won titles. ECW, not the real WCW, but you guys know what I mean. WWF, WWE, TNA, New Japan Pro Wrestling, they've pretty much been everywhere except Ring of Honor. And a very successful tag team. They pretty much started tables. No one really used tables. The whole tables gimmick was really non-existent before the Dudley Boys. You know, all these table matches and the uses of tables you see in wrestling promotions, it really all started with the Dudley Boys. You know, Public Enemy did it too, but the Dudley Boys or Team 3D, they really got it over. They're a good tag team. They've always been really good at cutting promos. Bully Ray is one of the best heat invokers in the history of wrestling. I mean, he can cause riots and the stuff that he says. And they're both in great shape. You know, I've always wondered what their secret is, because, you know, you look at Jeff and Matt Hardy. You know, Matt Hardy, because of all those leg drops he did, you know, all those crazy TLC matches that Dudley's had with Edge and Christian and the Hardys, you know, because of those matches, it ended Edge's career early. Christian's injury prone. The injuries that he had from all those ladder matches are catching up with him. All those leg drops from Matt Hardy had stiffed up his legs, and so that affected his weight gain. And Jeff Hardy, on the surface, he may not look that injured, but he actually really is. To those of you that notice, whenever Jeff Hardy does the twist of fate, a lot of times he doesn't fall properly on his back. It looks more like a stunner. The reason he does that is because he's done so many swantons, his back is shot. So he has to be careful with how he slams himself on the mat. So, you know, Jeff, Matt, Edge, and Christian have suffered from many of those crazy matches, but Bully and D-Von, as they've gotten older, they've actually gotten into better shape. So I've always wondered what their secret is. I always remember their match with the Motor City Machine Guns, like back in 2010. That was a good match, and they ended their career and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm happy for Team 3D, or the Dudley Boys, whatever you want to call them. I do feel that eventually one day down the road, and maybe not anytime soon, but definitely 5 to 7 years from now, I can definitely see them being inducted in the WWE Hall of Fame as a tag team. I mean, they're very important to ECW and really to TLC in general, the whole TLC concept, Edge, Christian, the Hardy Boys, and the Dudley Boys. They were the ones that got over the TLC concept. Sure, Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, they had ladder matches too, so I'll give them credit as well, but the whole TLC thing, you know, the whole Money in the Bank stuff, all these crazy spots with ladders and tables, all that was started with help from the Dudley Boys. So I definitely see them going in the Hall of Fame one day as a tag team. And overall, I don't see any problem with TNA inducting them. So congrats to Bully Ray. Congrats to D-Von. Congrats to Team 3D. John, do you have any opinions about Team 3D going in?
Definitely well-deserved. I've been a fan of them forever. And definitely well-deserved.
All right, so this brings us to our next matchup.
Actually, I'm actually going to have to step off. It was good talking to you. I'll hope to call back in a little bit.
All right, no problem.
All right, thanks.
All right, so this brings us to our next match, Austin Aries against Kenny King. This is the second matchup where the winner is going to become the number one contender and be added into the main event. Aries and King had a good matchup. It was a lot more faster paced. Obviously, both of them are much faster than Joe and Lashley. The finish was pretty cool. Basically, Aries was trying to hit the brain buster the entire match, but Kenny King kept using his speed and his agility to escape the move. And so finally what happens in the end is that Kenny King is on the top rope and Aries catches him, and he ends up hitting the brain buster from the very top rope. And he puts Kenny King away for the 1-2-3. And so this makes the main event official, Bobby Lashley versus Austin Aries versus EY for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. And we'll get to that later on in the show. Match number 5 was the Von Erichs, Marshall and Ross Von Erich, along with their father, Kevin Von Erich, against the Bromans, Jesse and DJ Z, Zima Ion. What's the other guy's name? There's Jesse, and then there is, oh yeah, Robbie E. Robbie E. wasn't with them that night. So sometimes Jesse will team with DJ Z. So in case you didn't know, Slammiversary was on Father's Day, so that was cool. And Von Erichs are very, very, they're like legendary. They're royalty in Texas, basically. So it was cool to see, you know, a father introduce his two sons on a big pay-per-view for a big major promotion. And so this is just an impromptu tag match. I'm not sure if this was just TNA giving them exposure or if they're going to be part of the roster. But it was a cool moment. I can't hate on that. I can't hate on the dad, you know, giving his son's spotlight on Father's Day. I mean, that was a cool moment. So the match is cool. It didn't go too long. They both looked a little green, obviously, but, I mean, they got potential. I mean, they're Von Erichs. Everyone that's a Von Erich has potential, theoretically anyway. The finish came where I believe Jesse came in there, and he hit one of the Von Erichs like off a chair. And keep in mind, for the majority of the match, Kevin Von Erich was in the audience, and he was just kind of looking at the crowd and, you know, cheering his sons on. And so when Jesse hit him with the steel chair, that's when Von Erich came in, and he just kind of put Jesse in the claw, and, you know, the fans just marked out. It was a really big pop. So, you know, to those of you that don't understand the significance of that, I mean, you got to understand, like, the Von Erichs, as I told you before, they're wrestling royalty in Texas. So Von Erich coming inside of a ring and putting you in the claw in Texas live on pay-per-view, that would be like the equivalent of, like, say, John Cena's cutting a promo, and then, like, Stone Cold just comes out and just gives him a stunner. That's, like, the equivalent here, you know. That's just how over the Von Erichs are in Texas. So that was a pretty cool moment. Was it a waste of time? Was it a time killer? Yeah, it killed some time, but, again, it's Father's Day. I can't hate on, you know, Father's Day moment. I mean, WWE did it before last year with Michael McGillicuddy or Curtis Axel, whatever you want to call him, like when he won the Intercontinental Championship on Father's Day. So, you know, that's cool. You know, I can't hate on a Father's Day moment, so it's whatever. All right, so this brings us to the next matchup, which is Angelina Love defending her Knockouts Championship against Gail Kim. This match is okay. The story here basically was Gail Kim had Love beat on several occasions, but the referee, Stifler, the one that did the crazy seizure cell, the referee Stifler was showing favoritism towards Angelina Love and the Beautiful People. This isn't the first time TNA has done this story. They always seem to have referees at some point involved with the Beautiful People. So Angelina Love is able to retain. What happens in the match essentially is, I believe Velvet gets on the apron and she sprays Gail Kim in the eye like some hairspray. And referee Earl Hebner sees it. Well, the referee that sees this, like, Stifler is the original referee, right? And when he sees Gail Kim get sprayed in the eyes, he just sort of no-sells it, and he's like, whatever. So then Earl Hebner comes out, and he basically, like, throws Velvet out, saying, you're banned from ringside. Then he tells the referee Stifler to leave, and then, you know, Gail Kim and Love continue to have their match. And there were two different moments in the match where Gail Kim had Love pinned for a three count. But then there was a little spot where Earl Hebner's hit, he's knocked out, and then when he's knocked out, Love pins Gail, and then that's when Stifler comes in and counts for the three. So the story here was, like, Gail had her beat, like, more than once, but the referee is biased. So whether or not the beautiful people are paying off the ref, or if he's just simply infatuated with the ref, or if he's sampling thrills with them, like, who knows. So Angelina Love, she retains, and she's still your Knockouts champion. All right, so this brings us to match number 7, which I actually thought was match of the night, EC3 against Bully Ray in a Texas death match. This is a pretty cool match. Bully Ray always has really cool gimmick matches. You know, I'm actually getting some respect from EC3. When he first came, I was like, whatever, but he's actually growing on me. He's improving in the ring. He's actually good on the mic. And he's what's the word I can say this? He took it like a man. He took a lot of crazy bumps in this match. Bully Ray gave him a lot of stiff shots. Bully Ray is notorious for those stiff slaps to the chest. There was a moment in the match where there was some glass shards in the ring, and EC3 literally took a cutter, like a RKO diamond cutter, whatever you want to call it, the cutter variation move. He cuttered him on the steel. There was a moment in the match where Bully Ray went outside, got the knife, and cut some of the ring canvas out so you could actually see the wood itself. So EC3, you know, he took a lot of the bumps, and, you know, he took it, and he just kept working. So I'll give him credit. He's improving. You know, it's like sometimes when people debut, you're like, oh, this person sucks. But then, you know, as time goes by, they actually get good. So, you know, EC3 is growing on me, and I can definitely see him. And EC3, he's proved, just kind of like with the Pope, D'Angelo De Niro, back in TNA a few years ago. EC3 and the Pope are proof that every now and then TNA can creatively use some guys better than WWE can. Because in WWE, both EC3 and the Pope were just generic calls, creator wrestlers, if you don't know what a call is. But here in TNA, you know, both of their gimmicks were more interesting. They were different. So, you know, I'll give TNA credit, and I'll give EC3 credit. EC3 does win this match, though. What happens in the end is Dixie Carter's coming out, and she's, like, trying to stop EC3 from being put through a table, and this distracts Bully, and Bully's just chasing Dixie, and Dixie accidentally runs into EC3, and, you know, when Bully is getting ready to put EC3 through a table, you know, Rockstar Spud comes out. I mean, you get the idea, just a bunch of run-ins and stuff. And, you know, it's a Texas death match, so, you know, it's no DQ or anything, but eventually EC3 is able to put Bully Ray through a table, and, you know, this knocks him out. So he's down for the 10 count. And so the winner of the match is EC3, a very brutal match. And it was pretty good. It was definitely match of the night. And I enjoyed it the most. This takes us to match number 8, Mr. Anderson versus James Storm. A little weird for it to be the second-to-last match on the card, but what can you do? And for this match, it was pretty simple. It was basically some members of the Dallas Cowboys were there, and James Storm was just kind of taunting them, making fun of them, and, you know, just doing heel stuff. He basically cut a promo saying that they suck and, you know, that, you know, they're not real cowboys and he's a real cowboy. So then Mr. Anderson comes out, you know, panders to the crowd. Him and Storm work for a few minutes. Then eventually what happens is when Storm is outside, he drinks beer and, you know, he spits it on them and, you know, he's basically telling them to fuck off. And the Dallas Cowboys, you know, they start getting rowdy. And it was, you know, kind of like a Sports Center moment, whatever you want to call it. You know, security comes out, tries to break them up, and, you know, as he gets back in the ring, Storm that is, he runs into the mic check for Mr. Anderson. So 1-2-3, Anderson wins, and then the Dallas Cowboys, they just come in and celebrate with Mr. Anderson. So it was just one of those, you know, moments for SportsCenter. You know, it's cool to see, you know, some sports stuff in TNA as well. So this brings us to our main event of the evening. It was a triple threat cage match, EY versus Bobby Lashley versus Austin Aries. And honestly, though, this crowd seemed to be behind Austin Aries. This was a good match. The story here was Lashley, he's physically superior to both of them. So the whole match was basically like it was Aries and EY like temporarily, you know, joining forces to sort of like, you know, temporarily take out Lashley. And then once Lashley was out the equation, EY and Aries would fight each other. And then Lashley would just kind of overcome them both with a powerful clothesline or spear or something like that. It was a different match. It was good. You know, all three styles are very different. You know, Aries is very technical. Lashley is pure power, and EY is just kind of a mixture of everything put together. And it was a good match. One spot I thought was cool was how they got rid of Lashley in a believable fashion, where Lashley, he was trying to spear EY, and his spear was so powerful, EY got out the way, and, like, Lashley speared himself through the door. And, you know, so then EY then closed the door. And in this match, you don't win by escaping the cage, which is weird because I know that's the whole point of the cage match, but you only win via pinfall or submission. So this left EY and Aries, and they were just going back and forth. And, again, it definitely seemed like, you know, EY, he was over. He was getting a chance, but it definitely seemed to me that the fans were behind Aries, and they wanted Aries to win this particular matchup. But the finish was cool. What basically happened here was Aries went for his trademark brain buster, but when he picked him up for the brain buster, EY used the momentum of the cage to bounce himself out of the move and then reversed it into a pile driver, which I thought was really cool. That's one of the things about cage matches is different, is you can use the cage as part of your arsenal for counters like that. It was really cool. So EY, he ends up hitting the pile driver on Aries, 1-2-3, still your TNA champion, EY. So the match is over. You know, EY, he helps Aries get up. They shake hands, the whole respect thing, pretty much acknowledging and solidifying Aries as a babyface for now anyway, because he's changed several times. Overall, though, this was a good pay-per-view. I can't really say there was one bad match on the entire card. And I'm not just saying that as a TNA fan. Like, it really was a decent show. It was decent. So I'll take my hats off to TNA for a good show. But let me see. I'm going through some more of my TNA notes, just trying to make sure we got everything out the way. All right, so else, there's some other stuff going on in TNA. One of the big issues right now is if you go to TNA's Facebook or if you go to their website, you can see some polls going on. They're actually hosting a poll, and they want to see whether or not fans want the four-sided ring or the six-sided ring to stay. Or you can go to the poll and you can vote for four sides or six sides. You can go to Twitter and you can, you know, hashtag four sides, six tags, and stuff like that. So now TNA is actually hosting a poll. You know, so you as a fan, even if you don't like TNA, you can actually go to their website and vote. I believe the poll expired last night after Impact ended, but the poll, it was up there for about a good, I want to say, 3 to 4 days, maybe more or less. I'm not exactly sure. It was up there for at least 2 days. You could go there and you could vote. So anyway, Ron's still in the hole. I'm going to bring Ron back in.
Unmuted.
Hey, Ron, what's going on?
What's up, Epps?
So do you have any opinion about this four-side, six-side stuff?
Doesn't matter to me. I mean, the ring doesn't change the product, you know, so. But if the fans in fact, you know, it, I guess, but I've seen a couple of wrestlers don't like the six side ring. I guess it's bad on their back, or whatever. But to me, I mean, keep the four sides. I mean, it doesn't really matter. But just keep the four sides and just improve the product overall. I don't think the way a ring looks determines if Impact is good or not.
Mhm. Yeah. Here's my thought on it. Hogan and Bischoff. Those who don't know, well, I think many people know the story by now. It's common knowledge. Hogan and Bischoff came to TNA in 2010, and basically they got rid of the six-sided ring. I forgot Hogan's precise words. Something like, you know, the four-sided ring is traditional, and, you know, this is tradition, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, he got rid of the ring, and, you know, since then, you know, TNA, they've made a lot of mistakes. Some would even say a domino effect of mistakes. But if you could trace it, the mistakes back to its origin, like when did it really start, many would say it went back to the six-sided ring being gone. And keep in mind, when Hogan got rid of it, there was no consent from the wrestlers or the fans or whatever. So I don't want to rant too much on the topic. All I really got to say about the six sides versus the four sides is this. All right? I am not a sports fan. I know Ron's a sports fan. I know KME's a sports fan. I know Hugo's a sports fan, you know. I don't follow sports like that. But even though I don't follow sports, if there's a certain team that you say, there's a symbol that comes to my head. If you say the Chicago Bulls, I think Michael Jordan. If you say the Lakers, I think Kobe. If you say the Heat, I think LeBron James. Okay, this is just, and this is me, a non-basketball fan. I don't watch basketball. But even though I don't watch basketball, I know who these people are. WWE, for instance, what's their symbol? Some might say John Cena. Some might say WrestleMania. The whole point is, as a wrestling company or anything in general, you know, you got to have a symbol. When you think of Marvel, what do you think about? Think about X-Men, Spider-Man? When you think about DC, what do you think about? Batman, Superman, the Justice League, whatever. Whatever you think about is whatever you think about. I'm not here to debate what you should or shouldn't think about. But TNA, though, what is TNA's symbol, though? And I think most would agree their symbol was the six-sided ring. That made them stand out. 90% of people that watched TNA for the first time, it was probably some crazy X Division match with Samoa Joe, Daniels, and AJ Styles. As a matter of fact, almost every single person I've talked to that is a TNA fan, almost 90% of them tell me, oh, the first match I saw was that Unbreakable match, AJ Styles, Joe, and Daniels, six-sided ring, and they just tore the house down. You know, the six-sided ring was TNA's visual, their symbol. That was what made them stand out, and it was different. Now, TNA, in my opinion, they can survive without a six-sided ring. And what Ron said is very true. You can go on Twitter, and you'll find many people from the Impact roster actually preferring four sides. Magnus says four sides. Aries says four sides. Who else? EC3 says four sides. I remember AJ Styles in an interview some time ago. I think it was like for RF Video where he said that the six-sided ring, you can get injured easier there, and the four-sided ring was easier to work in and stuff. So I believe the TNA can survive with four sides, and I don't believe the six-sided ring is necessary for TNA to improve. However, if TNA wants to continue living with a four-sided ring, they need to find something that represents them. They need to do something that symbolizes them because they don't have that. Like, who's the top babyface in TNA? Who's the top heel in TNA? You don't know. It's all over the place. There's no order. There's no structure in TNA. It's just random, you know. And that six-sided ring was one of the few things that just stuck, you know. So if they don't want to return to if the six-sided ring doesn't return, like, here's some things you can do. I mean, if you guys remember, there was something called the World X Cup. That was different where, you know, they brought in different wrestlers from different parts of the world to compete to see which country had the best wrestlers. I mean, there's the King of the Mountain match. I mean, if you guys remember back in the day, WCW, they used to have a lot of outside shows. I'm not saying TNA has to do that, but TNA, what I'm trying to say is, with a four-sided ring, let's just say that TNA does everything that they can humanly do to be a good product. Let's say they get rid of Dixie Carter. Let's say they push the X Division. Let's just say they bring in all these new knockouts. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that TNA does everything right, right? And their product is good. But at the same time, though, even if it's good, visual-wise, it's not going to stand out from WWE Ring of Honor. And, you know, the six-sided ring is what drew in many fans. So TNA can survive without the six-sided ring, but if they want to continue living without it, they need to find some other type of symbol. That's what I think about it. But the voting ended sometime last night, I believe. And they said that whatever wins the vote is going to debut in the New York City tapings, which is going to be in the Manhattan Center, the ballroom. That's going to be a very interesting visual. That was the place where the first Raw was held. And the visual of seeing that, the Manhattan Center, with a six-sided ring, that's going to be interesting. But Dixie Carter said on Twitter or something like that that I think she said the six sides were, you know, obviously winning in the polls. So, but it's nice to see that there's some legit arguments for why, you know, people should keep the four-sided ring. I'm seeing fans give legit arguments. I'm seeing wrestlers give legit arguments. At first, I thought people were just going to vote four sides just to be trolls. So it's nice to see some legitimate arguments there. But I agree with you there, Ron, that, you know, it doesn't matter what side it is. If, you know, if the product still sucks, then it doesn't matter, regardless if it's four sides or six sides. So, you know, we'll see what happens. There's really not much else we can do about that. All right, so this brings us to Impact, which happened last night. And, Ronnie, I know you got something to say about what happened, so I'm going to give the floor to you.
Oh, you mean like the end part? Because that's basically what I mean. I saw the Tommy Dreamer Dixie little segment. That was pretty good. But you know, I did think they're gonna go with Bobby Lashley to take the strap. But you know, it was a serious improvement to what they've been doing, and it's one big step for not just brothers like me, but brothers like KME, fake brothers like Chad, and sellout brothers like them guys on the other side. But it was good though. I was shocked, but I was happy, and hopefully Lashley should turn face at the champ, because him being a heel totally not believable. He just looks like a nice guy.
Yeah, I agree with you there. All right, so Impact last night was in Bethlehem. I think Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I could be wrong here. And it was a live show. Arena looked much better. Much, much, much better. It's so great to see TNA get out the Impact Zone. And the walking set was wider. They had more work to move around outside of the ring. So, and most importantly, the fans. The fans were actually hot. They were excited, and they were not sitting on their hands, man. TNA having a show automatically outside of the Impact Zone is automatically a good. So to make a long story short, because we've been talking about TNA for almost an hour, I'll just sum this up. Really important stuff that happened here was Taryn Terrell came back. She still looks good, and basically teased a match with Gail Kim to be interrupted by the Beautiful People. They started fighting. There was a Tommy Dreamer. He showed up. You know, him and Dixie Carter had some beef, and you know, they let Dreamer come on the show. You know, he plugged his House of Hardcore promotion, cut a good promo on Dixie. You know, they hugged, and then, you know, Dixie just gave him a low blow, whatever. So, you know, I'm guessing maybe he'll, you know, work with EC3, put him over, you know. So, but you also had the Wolves defend their titles. There was a triple threat match. There was the Wolves, Samoa Joe, and Aries against Willow and Abyss. The Wolves retained. Then they had a second match with Magnus and Bram later that night where they retained via DQ, because things were not looking good for Magnus, and so they got a weapon they started hitting. But let's focus on the big story. The big story here was at the very beginning, EY fought Kenny King for the TNA World Championship, and EY was able to beat King, and MVP basically said that he would be fighting Lashley later that night. And so EY fought Lashley, and what basically happened was, like, throughout the night, MVP was banning people from the building and was, you know, basically saying you got to leave, no one interferes. So by the end of the night, there was nobody left but EY, Lashley, King, and MVP. And so Lashley and EY had their match. It was a good match. But EY hits the pile driver on Lashley, but Kenny King pulls the ref out, and eventually Lashley hits the spear on EY, 1-2-3. So your new TNA champion is Bobby Lashley. And history is made here. This makes Bobby Lashley the very first African-American TNA world champion. A lot of people say, oh, what about R-Truth? Ron the Truth Killings was a two-time NWA champion. The NWA and the TNA titles are completely different titles. They are not the same at all. So, yeah. So Lashley wins here. Like what you said, Ronnie, I'm in full agreement with you. Lashley does look like a nice guy. He just does not look. Well, I mean, you know, he's physically threatening and intimidating, but, like, his face, he just looks like a nice guy. it's sort of annoying. It's sort of like a rolling of the eyes to see, oh, okay, a black guy wins. But like KME said, whenever a black guy becomes champion, it's always as a heel. You know, why can't they be a face? I agree there, but let's not nitpick too much. Lashley wins here. And some fans that are annoying me, some fans are like saying, oh, EY dropped the belt because Daniel Bryan got stripped of it. Well, see, here's the thing. You guys are acting like Lashley beating EY is random. It's not like this dude has been booked horribly. Bobby Lashley has not lost a match since he's come back. He's been booked strong. He beat EY at the go-home show to Slammiversary. He beat Joe at Slammiversary. And the main event, he didn't take the pin. Aries did. And every other match Lashley's had, he's been booked very dominant. You know, so he has not lost a single match. They've booked him, I won't say as a monster, but he's pretty much destroyed everyone that's gotten in his way in a very convincing fashion. So Lashley winning here, is, to me, isn't a total shock. And you also got to consider that it was pretty clear to me that MVP was going to beat EY anyway. I think more EY dropping the title here to Lashley is more so with MVP being injured, more so than anything dealing with Daniel Bryan. So I just think that some WWE fans just like to compare anything TNA does to WWE just for the sake of argument, which I think is really silly. But I'm happy that Lashley won, not just as an African-American fan myself, but I'm happy mainly because, you know, this shows me that TNA is catering to a market of fans that WWE honestly just doesn't. I know some might get butthurt when I say that, but it's the truth. I mean, do you have anything to say about that, Ron?
To be fair to WWE, they market to a certain section of brothers, the ones that like to get their ass beat and not do nothing about it. But it's cool with what TNA's doing. You know, it's good that they're actually trying to be different from what the Fed is doing, because over the past couple of years, they've been trying. They've been taking each other's ideas, and now I think with the whole Lashley thing, I hope they're kind of going to a new direction where, you know, let's be totally different, let's change stuff up, and hopefully the Fed could actually copy this and actually find a credible black person to put a title on, but there is one at the moment because Rusev is beating the shit out of all of them.
Yeah, at least JTG was spared. Oh, speaking of JTG, I'm hearing rumors that Crime Time is now accepting independent booking, so JTG and Shaq can reunite on the indies. That'd be cool. So shout out to them, stuff like that.
Crime Time or what?
Yeah. They're accepting some independent bookings. I'm sure we'll see them in some.
I mean, their tag name. They're going to be Crime Time or?
Yeah. I guess they legally own the name. I'm not sure.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, okay. I'll find some more information about that on a later episode. I know some people do legally own the rights, like CM Punk owns his name, MVP owns his name, so, you know, it's not unheard of. All right, so that's enough TNA talk for today. Right now I want to move on to some WWE stuff. Not too much WWE stuff to talk about. Let's just keep it really just three bullets we want to talk about. First, we want to talk about the people that were released. Then we want to talk about the current matches confirmed for Money in the Bank, only two as far as I know. And then we're going to talk about the Shield. So last week, WWE, they did some budget cuts where, you know, they cut some people from the roster. And Drew McIntyre, Curt Hawkins, Camacho, Brodus Clay, JTG, Oksana, Evan Bourne, Jinder Mahal, Yoshitatsu, and Teddy Long, all of them were cut, released, future endeavored, fired, whatever word you want to use. So Teddy Long, I have it on the good authority that he was on his way out anyway. He's retiring, you know, so it'll suck not seeing tag team matches anymore. Teddy, you know, so he's gone. Yoshitatsu, I mean, what can I say about Yoshi? I mean, ever since that story that circulated about him knocking out Sheamus, which I totally believe, you know, he's just been, like, insignificant. People always about how African-Americans are really not used properly. Really, Japanese folks, they get the short end of the stick in WWE, too. I couldn't tell you the last relevant Japanese guy in WWE. That's how long it's been. Yoshi, in the end, though, he'll be okay. He'll go back to New Japan Pro Wrestling, you know. There's many other places he can go to. Jinder Mahal, although I was not a fan of Jinder, you know, he was good in the ring. And, you know, they could have used him better. And, you know, with Bender gone, you know, 3MB is gone as well. Drew McIntyre, the chosen one, former Intercontinental Champion. He never really recovered from, you know, that incident with his ex-wife, Tiffany. Not exactly sure the details of what happened there. Not really sure where he can go. I would say go to TNA, but, again, his ex-wife is there, so that's awkward. But then again, you know, Kurt Angle worked with Jeff Jarrett after what Jarrett did to his ex-wife, so that's kind of weird, but I'm sure we'll see Drew somewhere. Evan Bourne was released. You know, he had a foot injury, and he's been off the scene for quite some time. Evan Bourne's the guy I'm least worried about. He'll be fine. He has so many outlets. He can go to PWG. He can go back to Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate, USA. Evan Bourne will be fine. We'll be seeing him again. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if WWE rehired him later once he got his shit together. Exana, I know Exana's your girl, Ronnie. I know she's your girl, so I'll be light on Exana. All I'll say is at least she didn't need anybody in the eye. So JTG, the higher power. Oh, you got something on Exana, Ronnie? You can talk about her if you want.
Nah, man. It was just, I mean, it was sad to see her leave, man. Once she dropped that heavy knee on Naomi's face, man, you was like, okay, I don't think she's gonna be here too long. Cause that was, that was pretty sloppy. So, I mean, her time was running out, man. You know, and the E! Network didn't have no business with her, so she was gone.
Yeah. Sometimes WWE has this really bad habit of making you do embarrassing stuff before you get fired. So when they did that stuff with Alicia Fox and she was making her eat popcorn, I figured she was gone. Exana, I'm not sure. I don't follow women's wrestling like that. I'm sure we'll see her down the road somewhere again. JTG, the higher power. Oh, my goodness. This dude, for years, this dude was a legend. He was an internet meme. Just for whatever reason, so many folks are being released, and he was just still there. There are many fans that actually legitimately believe that WWE just forgot about him, which I think is a legitimate statement. They may have. I've just forgotten about him. But they released him. Brodus Clay, Mr. Main Event Player. I think maybe if he never felt that, he'd still have a job. But to be fair, he was on Main Event every week. Camacho. Man, Camacho is the one that I'm the most salty about. And I'll tell you why. I went to a house show 3 years ago, and I saw Unico and Camacho in a tag team match, and they were over as fuck. I live down here in the South, so we're into that type of thing, you know. And when I saw Camacho and Unico, it reminded me of Conan. Like, you know, like Conan just with two people, they had like a little LAX vibe. And I was like, man, these guys are different. They can go. They look different. I mean, what's the deal here, you know? And Unico, he's playing Sin Cara now for no reason, and Camacho just wasn't used. He was on NXT, had a little feud with Adam Rose, so, you know, sucks for Camacho. Then there's Curt Hawkins, the other half of...
the Major Brothers.
Right. Yeah, Zack Ryder's former tag team partner, and, you know, he's gone too. So I'm sure we'll see him somewhere. There's many other talents and promotions out there as well. So it sucks, but, you know, the word going around is that, you know, these were budget releases. It wasn't like WWE was anything. It wasn't like it was anything personal or nothing. They just, you know, it's a business. People got to get cut, and, you know, it is what it is. So wish them the best in their future endeavors, and hopefully it all works out. But this was really the first talent purge of a big kind that we've had in some time. So, all right, so let's move on to The Shield. And right now, it seems like The Shield is just kind of, well, we already know it's over, but they've very quietly done it. I mean, Seth Rollins turned on them. He joined the Authority. And, you know, the very next week, Reigns and Ambrose teamed up with John Cena against the Wyatt family. They won the match. And a week later, pretty much they're all doing their own thing. Ambrose made it clear in the promo that he was going to get Rollins, whereas Reigns, his part of the promo was really just more so about, you know, believe in him, this isn't over, blah, blah, blah. So Ambrose had a Money in the Bank qualifier match of Bray Wyatt, and Rollins cost Ambrose the match. Rollins had a match of Dolph Ziggler on Raw, and Ambrose interfered. And it should be noted that Ambrose was no longer wearing his Shield gear. He was wearing, like, blue jeans and, you know, white T-shirt. As KME would say, he was channeling his Deuce Domino, whatever. And so later on in that night, Ambrose fought Wade Barrett, and Rollins interfered again. So they're making it very clear that Rollins and Ambrose are having a feud. If you watch SmackDown, Rollins debuted a new look. He has this Snake Bliskin, Nightwing, X-Men sort of outfit going for him. And Reigns is pretty much the only one that's still wearing the Shield outfit. And his theme is basically like a modified version of the Shield theme. Rollins and Ambrose now have their own themes as well. So it looks like they've quietly made all of them go their separate ways. It sucks, but, you know, it had to happen. You know, they had a good run. There was no more for them to do anyway. So, you know, Reigns, he's going to be in the Money in the Bank match. He's going to be in the ladder match at Money in the Bank for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. And Rollins, he's already announced there's going to be a actual Money in the Bank match briefcase that Rollins is in, and where he can only assume that Ambrose would be in it as well. So, Ronnie, the first thing I want to ask is, what's your opinion on the Shield seemingly going their separate ways? Are you sad? Are you happy? I mean, what do you feel about it?
They could have went a little longer, but sometimes it's like, how far could you have gone with the Shield? And, you know, I mean, it came quick. They probably rushed it, but now you got three guys, and now you got different programs. You added more wrestling like programs to Raw, so instead of just the Shield altogether, so you added more, and it was coming eventually, especially those three guys. But it's gonna be interesting to see what they do with Rollins. I hope they don't skyrocket him to the championship real like right away, because that's gonna kill him with the fans. He's gonna get major X-Pac heat with that. So hopefully they do it slow, and I think with those three guys, they really protected them a lot, so I don't think they might mess up with them.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we got Nate from Inside Wrestling coming in. Nate, what's going on?
Nah, not much. Seeing that it was a nice little pop on Monday with Reigns and Rusev in the ring as the final two, and then, you know, Reigns wins, which was good. And then they go to John Cena and talk about the air just gets sucked out of the building. This guy is an ass clown. I can't stand Cena. I wanted to ask you about the TNA thing with Tommy Dreamer yesterday getting kneed in the nuts by Dixie Carter. You see him bringing some ECW guys back, and I don't know. I think we're going to get that table spot. Dixie's going through a table in New York.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, Jay, the PWP owner, he thinks that Dixie will take the spot because she's such a mark for the business. And then others think that she's such a mark, she might think she's too good for the spot. So I hope she takes the spot. Hopefully no more ECW invasions. We've seen enough of that. And we should probably all mature and let go and acknowledge ECW is gone. But, hey, man, any excuse for me to see Tuco? I'm a huge Tuco mark, I won't lie. Yeah, it was cool to see Reigns. He's still wearing the Shield outfit. What Ron said is pretty much accurate. They've protected. I think the Shield collectively as a group, I think that they have been the most smartly booked group of wrestlers really in years. They've been protected. They've been booked very well. Reigns continuing to wear. I mean, you got to understand that Rollins and Ambrose, they already have experience from the indies. So Reigns, he needs a little bit more to, you know, get himself over. So letting him keep the outfit and letting him keep the modified version is still the modified theme of the Shield theme is cool too. So, you know, Ambrose, he's kind of dressing up how he used to do on the indie scene. And, you know, Rollins, he just has a Snake Bliskin thing going on. So,
you think they're going to rush Reigns now? It looks like Bryan's not coming back to maybe passively pass SummerSlam, that Reigns probably go for get the title at Money in the Bank. You think they're going to push him fast?
I think that they'll rush him only if the fans are really into him. We'll have to see. In retrospect, guys like Diesel and Batista, and it's ironic because when I look at Reigns, that's what I see.
Yeah.
Batista was not ready. and Diesel was not ready. But they were very over, and the fans were into them. So if the same applies for Reigns, I could see the same there. Reigns, you know, he's a hybrid to me. I see a mixture of Batista, Diesel, and The Rock. The Rock, obviously, for the Samoan in him. Diesel, Diesel had a pretty boy look, but he was kind of badass about it. You know, he had the long black hair. He was tall. You know, he was a ladies' man. You know, Diesel, he had that, you know, all the girls wanted to be with him and all the guys wanted to be him. And Reigns sort of has that sort of flair for him. And for Batista, the reason fans started liking him, it wasn't because he was turning face or anything like that, but Batista was just kind of he was kind of outsmarting Triple H indirectly, sort of. He was becoming the standout in Evolution, sort of. And just as time went by, Batista just very quietly got over, and I see very similar stuff in Reigns. I'm seeing some fans complain, saying Reigns needs to work on his moveset. And to those fans, all I say is give it time. You know, everybody's moveset, you know, it grows at some point. I mean, how many moves does Reigns have anyway? Let's see, what does he got? He's got the Superman punch. He's got the drop kick on the apron. He's got the spear. Is there any other moves I'm missing, Nate? Because I haven't really paid attention.
Pretty much like his big moves. Yeah, he's like seen, you know, like five moves of Doom, you know. But
mm-hmm.
They're impact moves at least too, like the Superman punch and the flying kick off the apron. So I mean, I don't know.
I think he'll be good.
He'll definitely be better than a Diesel character in the future. You know, I think he needs a power move, like a power slam or something, a power bomb or something. It'd be kind of cool, you know.
Yeah. I like the drop kick on the apron. That's a cool move.
Yeah.
And
he just got like a badass look when he comes in. Like, you know, it's like Lesnar, you know. When Lesnar's music hits, you know, shit's going to happen. Well, Reigns has got that look on his face like he's going to tear shit up. So he doesn't need a lot of moves, you know. So
yeah,
he's a badass.
I think he should start doing what Sid did. You remember when Sid used to come out? He used to, like, have his fist out and be like, you know, who's the man? Who's the man? Who's the man? The fans would be like, you're the man, Sid. You're the man. I've noticed that a lot of times Reigns likes to look at his fist. His fist is taped up. I think one thing that will really sell, they should, I know this is going to sound, like, really cheesy and stuff, but, hey, man, kids love this type of stuff. I think they should give, like, Roman Reigns his own custom glove and have Reigns out. Yeah, just have him, like, you know, like, fist bump. You know, fans and stuff. You know, I mean, I know it's really cheesy, but you know, kids love that stuff. You know, I mean,
I still go back with the night after WrestleMania 11 when Sid, you know, when Shawn Michaels gave him the night off, and he's like, "You don't give me the night off." So anytime I get a night off at work, I said, "I got a Sid. I got a night off." Oh man, I love that segment after WrestleMania 11. He powerbombed him like 3 times. He almost broke him on his hip. He dropped him on his hip, Sid. You know. Oh, jeez.
I remember that one. That was.
And when Hall and Nash, he made fun of himself. I got half a brain, you guys do. I didn't say it. Oh, man. His son tried out for Big Brother. You knew that, right?
Yeah. I saw that.
His son, yeah, was on Big Brother. Yeah. So.
I'm curious, when Sid did that, did Sean go face that night, or did Sid go heel? I don't remember.
I think it was Sean going face, yeah, and stuff. I think we got a Diesel. Well, Diesel was already face, yeah. So, but no, that was a cool Raw right after WrestleMania. And it was right in Hartford, too. I remember LT and Bam Bam Bigelow. So it was one of the worst WrestleManias, I think, of all time. But, no.
WrestleMania 11, I understand why fans hate it, and it was not a good WrestleMania at all. But at the same time, you guys got to understand that 1995 was not a good year for wrestling in general. It was very dead. The whole Hogan steroid scandal thing really fucked up a lot of stuff. And so wrestling wanted to go in a different direction. And you got to understand that WrestleMania 11, although on paper it wasn't good, it gave not only WWF, but it gave pro wrestling the much-needed mainstream attention that it needed. I remember to this day, because that was like one of my very first wrestling shows. I remember Jonathan Taylor Thomas was there. You know, he was a very popular child actor. Wasn't Salt and Pepper there? Yeah, Pamela Anderson was there. Well, I think Salt and Pepper was there. Yeah, I mean, so there were a lot of celebrity stuff there, you know, and it was right in WWE's backyard, too, so.
I think Bret Hart had sex with, wasn't that an urban legend, too? Bret Hart had sex with someone from Salt and Pepper or TLC or something.
I've heard rumors that Bret loves the sisters. That's what I've heard. Isn't he married to
a
black
chick? He's married to one.
Oh, okay. There you go. No wonder Owen Hart joined. Well, no wonder Owen joined the Nation. Oh, was that too soon, or was it too late?
So when Bret dies, that's all. He's not because once you go black, you can't go back. So I think that's it. So Bret's gonna be with a sister from now on.
So. The Black Heart, indeed. All right, no more puns. I could have like so much fun with that, but you know how it is. So I understand why fans hate WrestleMania 11. I'll watch Mania 11 over Mania 27. Fuck that show.
Yeah, I watched too. I was watching at work the night after WrestleMania 13 when Bret turned heel after his match with Austin. I love that double switch that they did at WrestleMania 13. Austin started as a heel, Bret was the face, and by the end of the match, Bret was the heel and Austin was the face. And then that was right after they went into the Canadian USA thing, which I thought was a good angle too with Bret Hart and the Hart Foundation and all that. I think that was a good group, you know.
Yeah, 97 was a good year. It's a very underrated year. It's just, you know, the whole stuff with the NWO and Sting was just so hot. A lot of stuff that WWF did just gets lost in the shuffle. But 97 was a very good year for WWF and for pro wrestling in general. All right, so let's move on to the Money in the Bank match. Oh, I'm sorry, I keep saying the Money in the Bank match, but it's not actually a Money in the Bank match. The ladder match. So this is actually an old-fashioned ladder match. Your current participants are Del Rio, Randy Orton, Sheamus, Cesaro, Bray Wyatt, Reigns, and Cena. And, you know, I like the unpredictability here. Obviously, Del Rio's not winning. I don't believe Randy Orton's going to win. Sheamus is not going to win. This narrows it down to Cesaro, Bray Wyatt, Reigns, and John Cena. Bray Wyatt could win, but in my opinion, a character like Bray Wyatt does not need a title. Raven, when I see Bray Wyatt, I think of guys like Raven, Jake the Snake Roberts, very charismatic, creepy guys. They don't need titles. They're already over. But, hey, if they put the belt on Bray Wyatt, more power to him. I will not complain. I don't believe Bray is going to win. So this narrows it down to Cena, Reigns, Cesaro. I don't believe John Cena is going to win because that's too obvious. And I've noticed that whenever WWE has something that's too obvious, it's the complete opposite. I don't believe Cena's going to win. And if Cena does get close to winning, I see him being screwed by somebody, whether it be the Wyatt family or Stephanie or something, you know, just typical authority stuff. So really, this just narrows it down to Reigns and Cesaro. Neither of them are ready to be a champion, but, hey, you know, when you got a champion that's injured, it's not about who's ready. It's about who's ready to step up at that moment. So right now, I'm just going to predict Roman Reigns. Is it too soon? Yeah, it's too soon. But, hey, it wouldn't be the first time we've seen this happen. So who are you predicting to win this, Nate?
Yeah, I think they're going to go – since Bryan's going to be out for a long time now, I think they're going to super push Reigns to the title. And then that sets up Triple H, Reigns maybe at SummerSlam. Cesaro would be good, too, because Cesaro-Brock Lesnar would be good. But they still can go that way with a non-title match. So, yeah, I think I would go with Reigns, you know, give him that super push. You know, I think it's good for him.
I think putting the belt on Cesaro is a good excuse for Cesaro to go face, because you could have him win, and despite the fact that he's the champion, Paul Heyman can just continually say, you know, my client Brock Lesnar ended the streak, which then annoys Cesaro, because it's like, you know, all you get to say is, you know, Brock Lesnar, I'm the champion, blah, 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 and that's how Lesnar comes in, so that's a great way to turn Cesaro face and a great way to put the belt on Lesnar. My only thing is, if they put the belt on Lesnar, I mean, we all know he's going to come back at SummerSlam for a match, but if he wins, like, then what? Because, you know, after SummerSlam, you know, WWE kind of goes on a downtime. You know, it's not really that good during the fall. So this makes me believe that whenever he does challenge, he'll lose. So I guess that would mean Cesaro would beat Lesnar, which would basically push Cesaro to the moon, but I doubt all that will happen. I think I'm just digging a little too deep, analyzing too far there. But
hey, Chris, I got to get going. I got another call. But no, it was nice talking to you. I'm going to probably do a show tomorrow around 3 o'clock or so. So if you feel free to call in.
All right, no problem. Thanks again, Nate.
Yep. See you, man. Bye.
All right, that was Nate from Insight Wrestling. And we pretty much discussed – oh, wait, there's one more match I got to talk about. The Usos are going to be defending their tag team championships against the Wyatt family. They've had some good matches at house shows, and they had a good match on Raw where the Wyatt family won. So, you know, Wyatt family being Luke Harper and Eric Rowan, by the way. So, you know, Usos, will they retain or will they lose? I'm not really sure. I got to give this some time to think a little bit more about that particular match. All right, so this brings us to Ring of Honor Best in the World. This is going to be taking place this Sunday live on pay-per-view, June 22nd, 2014. It's going to be in Nashville, Tennessee at the Tennessee State Fairgrounds Sports Arena. And I have the card right here in front of me, so let's just break it down. ACH versus, okay, some of these names I might botch. So if I botch, I apologize and ahead of time. Tommaso Ciampa against B.J. Whitmer, against Tadarius Thomas, against Caprice Coleman, against Takaki Wannabe, and ACH. I've probably butchered the Japanese guy's name. This is going to be a six-man mayhem match. The winner of this match is going to get a future World Television Championship shot. The six-man mayhem match is different. Basically what it is that you got two guys in the ring, and you got four guys on the apron. And it's like Lucha Libre rules, sort of. When you get thrown out of the ring, or if you fall out the ring, or if you just roll out the ring, then someone else can come in. They do this a lot in Lucha Libre USA. They do it a lot in AAA. It's very common. You know, it sounds simple on paper, but it actually makes the match more chaotic because, generally speaking, for people to just come in, there's got to be a lot of tags and stuff like that. So, you know, it'll be a cool matchup. The next match, we have Bad Influence. Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian from TNA are going to be returning to Ring of Honor, and now they're going to be known as Negative Effect. I'm not sure if Kaz has been in Ring of Honor before. I could be wrong. If I'm right, this might be his Ring of Honor debut. I don't believe he's been in Ring of Honor. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. But Daniels, he's been in Ring of Honor, and I can imagine he's going to get a huge monster ovation. And they're going to be going up against Red Dragon, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly for the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championships. This is actually the match I'm looking forward to the most. And, again, you know, just TNA dropping the ball, letting their guys go to other companies. So congrats to Daniels, congrats to Kazarian, and it's great to see Bad Influence or Negative Effect back together in a different company. So that's going to be a great match. Singles match, you're going to have Mr. Wrestling, Kevin Steen, against Silas Young. Jay Lethal is going to be defending the television championship against Matt Taven. I believe Truth Martini will be handcuffed to the ring post. I'm not really a fan of gimmicks like that. Usually they always find a way to interfere. But I'm a big fan of Jay Lethal, so I'm going to be supporting him. Submission match, Roderick Strong is going to be going up against Cedric Alexander. This is one of my favorite feuds going on right now in Ring of Honor. Basically, Roderick Strong is part of a group called The Decade. And The Decade, along with B.J. Whitmer and what's the other guy's name, the emo dude? I can't think of his name. He has, like, weird hair. Matter of fact, what I'm going to do, I apologize. I'm not supposed to do this live on radio, but I'm going to look up his name now because I feel bad for forgetting his name. All right, let's see here. What is his name? Jimmy Jacobs, that's his name. My bad. That's a very strange name, Jimmy. I don't know anybody named Jimmy in my personal life. I'm going to have a hard time remembering that. I'm just going to call him JJ. But if I do that, I might think he's Jeff Jarrett. All right, anyway, long story short, The Decade, Jimmy Jacobs, Roderick Strong, and B.J. Whitmer, they're basically like this group of disgruntled guys that have been Ring of Honor for years, hence the name Decade. And unlike people that leave and go elsewhere and then come back, they leave, and so they feel like they're better than everybody else. And so what they do is they often bully some of the younger Ring of Honor talents and stuff like that. And I actually enjoy their heel work. I like the story. So, yeah, Cedric Alexander will be fighting him. will be fighting Roger Strong in a submission match. The Briscoe brothers will be fighting Matt Hardy and Michael Bennett in a tag team match. And the main event match for the Ring of Honor World Championship will be Adam Cole defending his championship against the unbreakable Michael Elgin. And Michael Elgin has been undefeated this year, has not lost a match yet. He's went through many people. He's went through AJ Styles. He's gone through Kevin Steen. He's been through Cedric Alexander. He's had many great matches and stuff like that. A little lacking in the charisma department, but he's a great wrestler, and I love the mullet. So this is going to be a good match. AJ Styles did a video on YouTube where he was basically saying, on the Ring of Honor channel, where he was saying that he would like to fight the winner of the match, but regardless of what happens, he wants a piece of Adam Cole. So I'm looking forward to that. I was actually looking at some of Adam Cole's work in PWG, and he has this thing where he tells people to suck his dick. It's just really funny and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm actually looking forward to the pay-per-view. Again, like I said at the very beginning of the show, I'm going to be going to a bar not too far away from where I live, and I'm going to meet up with some folks. We're actually going to order the pay-per-view and watch it, eat some food and watch wrestling. And there's nothing better than watching wrestling while eating food with people we've got to talk about. So, you know, we've pretty much exhausted all the topics. I moved that block to 2 hours because I thought that it would take that long, stuff like that. So originally I was going to end the show at 10:30. It's 10:21 now. So what I'll do is I'll just end the show with one last rant and stuff like that. One of the main reasons I'm very happy that Bobby Lashley is TNA champion, one of my biggest beefs with wrestling in general is, you know, for instance, take Del Rio and take Sheamus from WWE. You know, it doesn't matter whether or not you like them or whether you dislike them. I understand why WWE pushes them, because WWE is a business, and as a business, they're going to go overseas to other markets. And, you know, Del Rio, he's going to be a big draw for the Latinos. And, you know, Sheamus is going to be a big draw for the European market. You know, you look at Canada, you know, you got guys like Sami Zayn coming up. You got guys from England, guys like Wade Barrett, guys like Paige, guys like Adam Rose. You know, WWE, they push guys of different nationalities so that when they go overseas, you know, they can have, you know, their guy. And as an African-American fan, that frustrates me because we don't have a guy. I mean, yeah, there's a variety of African-American talents in WWE, but none of them are, like, really relevant to, like, you know, to the point of a future world title contender. You got guys like Kofi Kingston and Mark Henry and stuff like that. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, they occasionally win championships. They have T-shirts and stuff, but there's just, we don't have a guy. We don't, you know, we don't have one. And it's very frustrating. And sometimes people will say stuff like, oh, well, so-and-so didn't win the title because of this. You know, like one of my favorite wrestlers is Shelton Benjamin. And people always tell me, oh, well, Shelton was great in the ring, but he had no charisma. Well, you know, Brock Lesnar, he had no charisma either. So what they did was they gave him a mouthpiece. That's just wrestling 101. If you don't have charisma, you give them a mouthpiece, you know, and they could have did that with Shelton, but instead they took the stereotypical route and gave him an overweight, obese black woman, mom, which I thought was very, you know, racist personally as a black person. And people say stuff like, oh, you know, so-and-so, like MVP didn't deserve to be, you know, a world champion. So it's like, okay, so you're telling me MVP didn't deserve it, but Sheamus did? You mean Sheamus, after feuding with Goldust and ECW, and then all of a sudden he's WWE champion 3 months later, he deserves it? I just find that very hard to swallow. The main point I'm making is, I don't want to rant too much, is as an African-American fan that's been watching since I was like, you know, three, I'm going to watch wrestling regardless. I watch WWE, watch TNA, I watch Ring of Honor and stuff like that. You know, I'm going to watch regardless, but as an African-American fan, it's very frustrating because I don't have that guy. You know, and other guys of other nationalities, they have that guy. And one thing that really annoys me is that when an African-American talent actually does get over, it seems like they sabotage said guy, or for whatever reason, they don't give the guy the tools that they need to get over and be a main event star. And I'll give you an example of this. The Wyatt family, Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family, they were the Wyatt family in NXT. Bo Dallas, you know, be a believer, you know, I believe, you know, he had that gimmick in NXT. And he has on the main roster. And then you have Big E Langston. This guy had a five-count gimmick, and he was basically a monster, and he was destroying people, and he was getting over in NXT. But then he goes to WWE, the main roster, and he's just this generic black muscle dude, no five-count gimmick, no nothing. So why is it these other dudes Why do they get the tools to be over, but then you don't give Big E the tool? Like, is it a coincidence? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, I don't know, man. It's just, I mean, take Titus O'Neil, for instance. Titus O'Neil, in my opinion, he has potential to be a main event guy. And people say, you know, his name, like when The Rock debuted, he was green. But what they did was they were smart. They protected him. They put him in the Nation with the guidance of Ron Simmons or Farouk and smart booking and being in a faction. The Rock was able to eventually get over. You know, who's to say that someone like someone as charismatic or as entertaining as Titus O'Neil can't do that as well under the same, you know, precursors and stuff. So, you know, I applaud TNA for putting the title on Bobby Lashley because that's, you know, that's whether you like it or not, that's catering to a market that really WWE just doesn't do that much. You know, I mean, as a fan that's been watching, you know, I'll watch their product. You know, I'll support them, buy DVDs and stuff like that. You know, I'm a subscriber of the network and all that stuff. So I don't hate WWE at all, or I'm not saying that at all. It's just as an African-American fan, I don't really see too much to be excited about, you know, from a race standpoint, because it's just like all of the black dudes that they have or black talents in general, it just seemed to get lost in the shuffle and they seem to get buried. And this is just isn't a black thing because there's other nationalities too that have been stereotyped. You know, there's been a lot of Asian stereotypes as well, and they've been kind of ignored even longer than, you know, we have. So, but I'm happy that Bobby Lashley's world champion, and, you know, it was a good move. And I'm happy to see that TNA is finally going to go into a step, into a different direction. And most folks wanted the title off of EY anyway. So that's pretty much all I got for today. And thank everybody for listening. And we'll see you guys next time. I think what I'll do is I'm probably going to wait until the end of – if I don't do a show next week, it'll be the week after next, because by the week after next, Best in the World and Money in the Bank will be over. And so then we can review those pay-per-views. So I like to typically review more than one thing at a time. So we'll get back to you guys on that. And thanks again for listening to PWP Radio, and I hope everybody has a good weekend. Thank you and good night.